We begin the hour by welcoming back to the program our friend, writer Colin Fleming, the man who predicted a while back that the Red Sox would stumble home from their road trip with a record of 3-8. Well played, Mr. Fleming.
Did they improve to 4-8 today?
The last I saw, they were down 5-4. I have not seen a final yet. It was not looking great. Another lackluster Chris Sale performance, too.
Can't be throwing 89 miles per hour and be effective when you are, Mr. Sale. But speaking of lack of efficiency, I did a very bad thing today, my friend.
What's that?
I had a very unsuccessful trip to the barbers, and you would think, oh, how poorly can that go? Well, it went pretty bad. I basically defaced myself.
Oh, no.
My hair was really long. It was like to my shoulders, and I went in for a shearing. I was confident about the razor setting on the sides and the back. It was a new barber. And then I just said for the top, I said, number three. He's like, are you sure you want this to happen? I'm like, oh, yeah, three me.
Uh-oh.
He freed me as soon as he stuck that razor there. Yeah, I was like, oh, dear, what have I done? I've balded myself, Kimball.
Oh, no. So you look like you're headed to Paris Island?
I look fairly phallic, to be honest with you. It's not a good look.
Oh, dear. Well, but you're young and healthy. It'll grow back quickly. That's what my mom always said when I got a bad haircut in the first day of summer. It'll grow back. It'll be fine. And then look away in horror.
I have a one-size-fits-all beanie, like most beanies are.
Yeah.
And I come out and I bend over to pick up some change I dropped and my beanie fell off.
Oh, dear.
So, no, I don't know. Dear. I think I've really just self-effaced myself in a way that I might not come back from.
If there's a man who can recover from that humiliation, it's you, Colin Fleming. Confidence is high around these parts.
I already have a couple hours of growth technically under me, so I'm on the mend.
There you go. Well, you have been ridiculously productive as usual. And look, we talk about prodigious work, but you wrote an entire book in less than a week recently, and not just a book, but a ridiculously funny and at the same time sweet and poignant and thoughtful book with a title that might surprise people. It's called Meathead Say the Craziest Things, Satire from the End of Civilization. How did you do all this in 1 week?
I did end up tweaking the title a little bit because I changed the word craziest to realist. Not realist like Stephen Crane, like literature, but R-E-A-L-E-S-T, Meathead Say the Realest Things, Satire from the End of Civilization. And the way it originated was that I see all of these people now looking for differences between everyone, and we are so knee-jerk with how we wish to ascribe qualities to a given sector of the population. And we think when we look at that particular sector, we know what someone is about because of two or three surface qualities. And what I believe is that we all have a lot more in common as humans when you scrape away the layers of the pose that everyone employs and you get down to the concerns that people have and the anxieties and the fears and their desire to be liked and have connection in their life. And I thought, because we've had some conversations on this program where I remember one at Christmas time, I was telling you about how I was at the symphony. I was next to this like really hot woman and this guy who was a meathead, and he was checking the Patriots score during Handel's Messiah. And, ha ha ha, Gronkowski, right? And he's just right next to me going at it. And you asked me about it, and I kind of did the voice, and I thought, you know what? You could have an entirely different kind of book. It's not nonfiction. It's not a story collection. I guess, really, if you had to call it something, it's a different form of a novel. But where it's 20 or so chapters, so it's not a long book. You get in, you get out. You don't want too much of a good thing here. And you sort of chart the devolution of society and culture and civilization through the eyes of a meathead and the way they talk and the bros and all of that. One of the advantages is meatheads are great sports. This would be one book probably that a meathead would read and think, ha, 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 that is so money, bro, that's me. Because that's sort of the nature that they have. But at the same time, you have this very broad book that I think that no one is too smart for in terms of understanding it. No one is too stupid for in terms of understanding it. And yet we all see each other in it. And it becomes this book that seems to poke fun at this group to really, at the same time, emerges as something very human and very warming as you are laughing your ass off.
Absolutely. It's the story of Chad, by the way, a great meathead bro name, if there ever was one there. How would you define meatheads?
I would define the meathead as someone who is fundamentally insecure and attempts to compensate through how much they hydrate, the amount of protein they consume, the reps at the gym. And yet the meathead, despite their insecurity, they tend to think that they are philosophers in a way, and they speak in highly poeticized forms. Yet they'll use words that they don't really know what they mean, and they speak almost, once you get the patois down, it's like a jazz musician. The meathead vernacular is comprised of all kinds of riffs, all kinds of phrases, all kinds of codes. And this guy, who is not technically, because the third person narrator is very clear about this, he's not technically necessarily, well, he kind of is, the same guy in every single chapter. He's meant to be a stand-in, so he could be someone here, he could be someone here, but I didn't want to do a type of thing where a meathead named Darren, right, a meathead named Ron, because I find that that's distracting. So I just want him to have this name, and he has his friends, Trey, and another guy named Unger, who everyone has to call the Ung Man, because that's how meatheads function. And in each chapter, this character is in a different scenario, and they get pretty diversified. So in one, he's at a session with his therapist.
And I wanted to bring up that one because it surprised me. Do you see, obviously you see Chad this way, are meatheads by nature that introspective?
I think everyone is introspective, but we put up these shields that downplay our level of introspection. But when you come out of the womb, you become a human, and you are in this world as a human. And you might devolve, and you might tamp away certain aspects of your humanity, and I think we do that more and more now. And this is the way society is headed, this disconnection, this constant pose becoming the identity such that the life lived goes away and is replaced by a life of existence. And I think, yes, the person who is the grad student who considers themselves very deep and goes to the therapist and gets the antidepressant medications is in many ways fundamentally similar to the meathead who is also doing the same thing. And you can't really go after certain genders right now satirically. There's not a lot of satire in this country, and there's not a lot of outright humor in a book. So he goes to the therapist, and he has sort of this breakthrough because his sister has gotten married. And you find out kind of indirectly that they're not talking as much as they used to. And that's cutting into what stands in for his social life. So he's trying to get his sister to basically replace him in therapy because he's hoping that she's the one who's not getting it, that she has this problem. And in another chapter, he's at a jazz bar. He has a cousin who studies music at Berkeley in Boston. And he loves going to the jazz bar, he thinks he does, because you can yell out to the stage, blow, as in play your solo. But he's thinking, like, this is awesome. I can say this word I'm really into, but now it's classed up. In another chapter, he gets drunk on malt liquor and encounters his dad's ghost. In another one, he's at a corn maze on Cape Ann, and it's his job to make this maze. Another one, he's at the fortune teller. Different chapter, he's at sensitivity training for work because he's gendering people by calling them bro, and he does not understand this, even though he says, hey, what's up, girl, bro? He doesn't get that you're not allowed to do that anymore, and he's in a field trip and a different one. Later, he and his buddies are going to get drunk and try to kill this beaver that is flooding one of their backyards. And then the last chapter, I won't say how this book ends, but it's post-civilization. And he's somewhere not especially earthly.
I also, as you suggested, I would love the chapter where he's not only listening to sports radio, but practicing to call in with his sizzling hot takes.
Yes, he writes his, now this is true of meatheads. Meatheads love when they're talking about literary arts. They love this. they think if you say the word peace and you say the word prose a lot, you might as well be H.L. Mencken. You are the greatest critic who's ever lived. And so he writes out the prose of his pieces to phone in and do his hot takes. But he's really, as he's going through all of this, you realize that he's somebody who's desirous of connection, and he doesn't have a lot of that in his life. And he has these moments, sometimes they're with younger people, like his best friend is in the building, and his best friend has a daughter who's like middle school aged, and she speaks all these languages. She speaks Polish, French, and the narrator says she also speaks the language of Chad. And she is at an art school because she's gifted, and her parents can't make it to this exhibition night where she has one of her paintings on display. So she has to take this neighbor, Chad, with her. And he is very nervous to be around these kind of artsy people. And it ends up going brilliantly for him. And he has this kind of accidental, but still real, spiritual awakening. And they have the best night out together. And you have these kind of moments of tenderness where he's able to admit things to people that pose less of a peer-based threat to him, where he says to someone on a field trip, he goes chaperoning on a field trip, and this little girl is left behind, and they're at the beach, and he's going to take her to a tidal pool because his dad used to do that with him. And he says that I call people bro who I like. And then there's this beat, this pause, and he says, or people I want to like me. Now, you can be Socrates, you can be the meathead next to me at the symphony. You can be everyone in between. You can be male, you can be female, you can be every label you might want to apply to yourself. You get that if you're human. And it became this kind of thing where, well, it's low risk going after these meatheads who would love it anyway. And if you were ever going to go sort of poking fun at a group right now, this would be the group to do it with.
But it's not poking fun. It's in many ways a fish out of water story. And I think it does. It humanizes everybody. And like you said, it's a reminder in a very, very funny way that we're all not that much apart and don't see the world all that much differently after all. And amazing that you did all this in just a week's time, my friend.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. But part of it was that I was so enhoused within this voice, which is not, of course, the way I normally express myself. But that's the nature of any character. No character I have talks like I talk, because you're creating something different. But once it really got rolling and I realized, like, okay, now a book like this, it can't be 100 chapters. You can't have 350 pages of this. It's too much of a good thing. If it sold a million copies, you could do volume two, or you could do it for a different sector of the population. You could easily do, you'd have to have some backing behind you, but you could easily, for instance, do a social justice warrior one where you're inhabiting that voice. And so we've talked about length on this show before in terms of word count, and how sometimes, a lot of times, a book is just padded out with empty description and it's not really going anywhere. So someone else's 10,000 words could be someone else's 200,000 words. And when this got to 20,000 words and 20 chapters, and it's about a 100-page book, before you even were talking in terms of illustrations, if that was going to be done, I thought, you know what? This is the type of thing that people get as a stocking stuffer. This is what they can get their brother in a fraternity. This is what some hipster can sit down and study as literature. Because frankly, I've not written anything. I mean, it took all of my ability, not because of the length, but because of the quality, to get it to the level it went to, I think.
Great work, as always. Check out everything Colin is up to at his website, colinflemminglit.com. Colin, as always, a pleasure, my friend. Have a good week, and we'll visit again next Tuesday.
Oh, says the confident man with lots of hair, but yes. Thank you.
Good luck in that growth spurt as well, if you know what I mean.
I hear you.
All right. Thanks, Colin. Colin Fleming, Tuesdays on Downtown.